And I was swanning about the West End as a young man and thinking I was the cat's whiskers because men smiled at me and followed me. I never thought, what do I have to do at the end of it? Someone said to me, do you mind being led everywhere and told to sit as though you were a dog? And I said, yes, I like it. It means I'm never to blame. Happiness is not out there, it's in here. And it doesn't matter what other people think of you. What matters is what you think of yourself.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Turks and Caicos Islands ordered to recognize one gay marriage, Kazakhstan primed to ban LGBTQ propaganda, and naked Quentin Crisp on rights, wrongs, and being human. Those stories and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending November 15th, 2025. The Turks and Caicos Islands must recognize the civil marriage of a gay couple by order of the Court of Appeal. Richard Sankar is a citizen of the Caribbean Overseas British Territory who married U.S. citizen Tim Heyman in Fort Lauderdale, Florida in 2020. Heyman's application for a spousal exemption to live and work there was denied by the island's Director of Immigration in August 2021, so the couple sued. The territory's Supreme Court subsequently ruled in March 2024 that denying a work permit for Heyman violates provisions of the Turks and Caicos Constitution that bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. The Court of Appeal rejected the government's challenge to the ruling in a decision published on October 27th. Heyman told the Washington Blade that he finally received his residence permit on November 10th. November 24th is the deadline for the Turks and Caicos government to appeal to the Privy Council, the London-based appeals court for British territories. The ruling of the Court of Appeals applies only to Sankar and Heyman's case and does not address the laws that continue to deny the island's queer couples full marriage equality.
Marriage equality is safe in the U.S., at least for now. The Supreme Court rejected the challenge by infamous former Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis on November 10th. Davis refused to issue marriage licenses to same-gender couples soon after the High Court's pro-equality Obergefell decision in 2015. She cited her devout Christian beliefs. Lower courts ruled that her actions personally violated the constitutional rights of those queer couples. Her case failed to get four votes to support hearing her case when the Supreme Court justices met in private, so they passed on it without comment. By continuing to appeal, Davis has avoided paying upwards of $360,000 in compensatory and punitive damages, including attorney fees to David Moore and David Ermold, one of those license-seeking couples.
So-called LGBTQ propaganda may soon be banned in Kazakhstan. The lower house of parliament unanimously approved a bill on November 12th that outlaws the dissemination of information containing propaganda of pedophilia and/or non-traditional sexual orientation, performed in public or via mass media, telecommunications, or online platforms, intended to convince an unspecified group to form a positive public opinion of said practices. It calls for hefty fines for violators and up to 10 days in jail for repeat offenders. The Central Asian nation borders both Russia and China and was once a Soviet republic. Its population is predominantly Muslim and conservative, although its government is secular. Kazakhstan President Kasym Jomart Tokayev has called for the protection of traditional values and supports the ban. Perhaps not coincidentally, he was in Moscow meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin when the vote took place. The measure mirrors Russia's No Homo Homo law and similar measures enacted in Hungary and other Eastern countries. Kazakhstan Education Minister Ghani Baysambaya told lawmakers children and teenagers are exposed to information online every day that can negatively impact their ideas about family, morality, and the future. Human Rights Watch charges that the measure blatantly violates Kazakhstan's international human rights commitments, including children's rights to education, health, and information. Amnesty International warns the ban institutionalizes stigma, fear, and censorship. President Tokayev will certainly sign the bill into law after its predictably easy win in Parliament's upper house. However, its legality could be challenged. Kazakhstan's constitutional court overturned a similar law in 2015, according to qnews.com.au.
Two popular gay dating apps are being removed from the Apple Store and several Android app outlets in China. The estimated 56 million users on Blued and the 2.7 million who have downloaded Finca can reportedly continue to use them, but they are no longer available to new users. An Apple spokesperson told Wired in an email, "We follow the laws in the countries where we operate." Earlier this year, the developer of Finca elected to remove the app from storefronts outside China, and Blued was available only in China. Blued is described as not only the largest dating app for gay men in China, but also the world, by the news and business service platform, The China Project. It calls Finca the second largest dating app for gay men in China. China decriminalized same-gender sex in 1997, but lately there's been a crackdown on LGBTQ visibility. Queer content has been deleted in imported TV shows and movies. International LGBTQ dating apps are blocked, and any positive portrayals of LGBTQ people is utterly forbidden in domestic productions.
Catholic-run hospitals in the U.S. are being directed to stop providing gender-affirming health care to trans patients by the Conference of Catholic Bishops. The November 12th meeting in Baltimore, Maryland, cited last year's Vatican pronouncement that virtually denies the existence of transgender people. The bishop's directive reads, in part, "In order to respect the nature of the human person as a unity of body and soul, Catholic healthcare services must not provide or permit medical interventions, whether surgical, hormonal, or genetic, that aim not to restore, but rather to alter the fundamental order of the human body in its form or function. At the same time, Catholic healthcare services are to somehow mitigate the suffering of those who experience gender incongruence or gender dysphoria in other ways. More than one in seven of the patients treated every day in the U.S. are seen at Roman Catholic-run hospitals, according to the Catholic Health Association. The directive was sharply criticized by the leaders of transgender-supportive religious groups, including the Unitarian Universalist Association, the Episcopal Church, the Union for Reformed Judaism, the Fellowship of Affirming Ministries, Metropolitan Community Churches, and the Presbyterian Church USA. New Ways Ministry is a Maryland-based LGBTQ Catholic organization. Its executive director, Francis DiBarnardo, declared in a statement, "In a church called to synodal listening and dialogue, it is embarrassing, even shameful, that the bishops failed to consult transgender people who have found that gender-affirming medical care has enhanced their lives and their relationship with God."
Finally, the Most Reverend Cherry Van was enthroned as the first female, first lesbian Archbishop of the Church in Wales. The history-making November 8th ceremony at St. Wolas Cathedral in Newport was packed with clergy, civic leaders, and members of the public. Van has made her mark in various positions in the church since her ordination as a deacon in 1989. She was the first woman to be ordained as a priest in the Anglican Church of England in 1994. The 67-year-old is well known for championing social justice, human rights, and inclusion. After taking her seat in the archiepiscopal chair in front of the high altar, Van preached in part,
"We live in troubling times. Division and hate, mistrust and disinformation are rife across our world and in our societies here in Wales. There seems to be an increasing tendency, an encouragement even, from some at least, to define ourselves over and against others in ways that significantly threaten the community cohesion that many have spent decades trying to build. Whilst the church cannot solve the world's problems, we can and are called to model a very different way of going on, which holds out another way of being and the hope that is the kingdom of God. And so, in the decisions we take and the values we espouse, in the way we live and relate to one another, there is to be no them and us. For all are created by God and made in God's very image, and that is our starting point. Hard though it may be sometimes, we are invited by God to celebrate the diversity of our global humanity and to embrace it as a gift. In God's economy, all are invited and all are welcome as children of the same Heavenly Father. We are one in Him.
That was the newly enthroned first woman and first lesbian Archbishop of the Church of Wales, the Most Reverend Cherry Van.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending November 15th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Joe Bainline. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Come on to the theater. Hi, diddly dee. An actor's life for me. A high silk hat and a silver cane. A watch of gold with a diamond chain. Hi, diddly day. An actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity. An actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with The Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends.
We celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. This week, we honor Transgender Day of Remembrance, observed every year on November 20th, to memorialize those lost to anti-transgender violence.
And we remember the birthday of writer and historian Sarah Schulman. Born November 20th, 1958, a powerful chronicler of queer New York and a key voice documenting ACT UP and AIDS activism.
Now let's rewind some key queer moments. On November 18, 2003, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled in Goodridge versus Department of Public Health that same-sex couples had the constitutional right to marry.
And on November 16, 1992, the iconic sitcom Roseanne aired Don't Ask, Don't Tell, one of TV's earliest same-sex kisses.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is just ahead.
My name was, as you'll know if you read the book, my Christian name was Dennis in a time gone by.
The naked civil servant himself. The world knows Dennis as Quentin Crisp. The flamboyant bon vivant whose memoir became the basis for British television's historic 1975 biopic passed away on November 21, 1999. Just 7 months earlier, This Way Out's Brian DeShazer went to the Los Angeles LGBT Center for his maiden interview, an exclusive sit-down with the author of the then-recently published Resident Alien.
I first asked how his trip to Los Angeles had gone so far.
Well, I don't know why I'm here except that I was sent here. I only go where I'm told to go, and I only say what I'm told to say. I'm a victim of fate. I wouldn't dream of saying I will go to Los Angeles and I will tell them this, because I haven't the nerve to do that. Someone said to me, do you mind being led everywhere and told to sit as so you were a dog? And I said, yes, I like it. It means I'm never to blame.
And your new book, New York Diaries.
That's right. That is called Resident Alien, which is a bad title. But it was chosen by my English agent, whom I've tried to get rid of, but I haven't succeeded. And he does what he thinks he will do, and then tells me he's done them. I didn't know they were going to publish a book called Resident Alien. And it was going to be called Among Friends, which was a good title. When I was swanning about the West End as a young man and thinking I was the cat's whiskers because men smiled at me and followed me, I never thought, what do I have to do at the end of it? And when I found out, I was so horrified I would have gone into a monastery.
I wanted to ask you what your idea of gay rights are.
Well, I feel dubious about rights altogether. I don't think we have any rights. I think if we all got what we deserved, we would starve. The thing is not to wake up and say, I'm going to get my rights. Then the whole day is ruined. You wake up and you say, I am nothing and I deserve nothing. And then everything's a bonus. You're happy, you're pleased, you're grateful. You see, when I was young, we thought all male homosexuals were effeminate because those are the ones we could see. And so I thought, well, this is the thing to do. It's no good writing books about homosexuals or plays because they're only seen by homosexuals. Oh, and by liberals wishing to be seen going into the cinema and coming out. So I thought, I will just be it. And then people can say, well, there's one. But he doesn't seem to be doing any harm. He's just doing his shopping. Because when I was young, they were so frightened. Where were they? How many were there? Homosexuality was worse than communism. Fewer of them, but more dangerous. And this, of course, was nonsense. And so I thought, well, I will live my ordinary life, but I will be seen to be homosexual. Well, now, effeminacy has a bad name, especially in England. Englishmen don't like effeminate women. They're always saying, oh, you know what she's like. She's always fiddling with her appearance and asking what I think of her. And she bursts into tears and things like that. They don't like all that. So, of course, a man who has any of these characteristics is a terrible nuisance. But in America, it's less offensive to be feminine. But all the same, there is a now masculine movement among homosexuals. I know a man who wears a hard hat. He's never seen a construction site, but he thinks it makes him more attractive.
Is there anything that you think that we could do to battle the Christian right's rhetoric against gays?
Well, you see, the Christian rights are very problematic. The leader of a movement always says less than the followers. I think that Christ said almost nothing about sex, except that if you looked at a woman with desire, you had already committed adultery. But the followers, you see, St. Paul was the public relations officer for the whole sin movement, and he really was against sex. I mean, he said it is better to marry than to burn. Not a hearty recommendation for the state of matrimony. And I don't know why he was so against sex, but he was. And that is what has formed the basis.
I notice in your performance you are quite a motivational speaker, if I must say. You speak so highly of finding your individuality and your identity. I wonder if you'd speak a little more about that with me.
Yes, that is really the point. You see, well, I speak only of happiness because it's the only thing I understand. And I do want people to understand that happiness is not out there. It's in here. And it doesn't matter what other people think of you. What matters is what you think of yourself. If I can get people to do that, that's a triumph. Because that is the whole point. People are always sitting in their rooms, biting their nails, wondering what some wretched man in another street is thinking about them. What does it matter? They must be absolutely convinced that they are right. Don't ask other people what is right. You know what is right. St. Teresa said we must treat all people as though they were at least better than ourselves. Isn't that a wonderful thing to have said?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Crisp. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and I appreciate your spending time with me.
It's been a pleasure.
After Mr. Crisp's passing on November 21st, 1999, his estate executor, Mr. Philip Ward, permitted me to record Quentin's memorial service at Cooper Union in New York City on March 3rd, 2000, and produced an award-winning radio broadcast. Here is Quentin's then West Coast publicist, Chip Snell, from his memorial service.
Philip asked me to read one of the last pieces that Quentin was writing, and it's called What Does It Mean to Be Human? When Professor Connolly asked me what it meant to be human, I was very sorry that I was not a scholar and had no physiological point of view to express. More than not being a scholar, I am not really a human being. I do not mind spending long hours alone, and I never find something to do. This is part of my nature. My sister reminded me before she died that she and my mother sat on each side of the fireplace and occupied themselves with darning socks and knitting and writing letters on their laps. I lay as a child on the rug between them, and once an hour one of them would say, "Why don't you get something to do?" And I said, "Why should I?" That is a question I cannot answer. Why should I have something to do? Of course, this is a theory that time is money. It is an American theory. I am not earning money while I'm not doing anything, which is sad. But if I were rich, I would never do anything. I was asked by a paper, "If you suddenly had $1 million, what would you do?" And I said, "Go to bed and never get up again." This was a great disappointment to the people who asked me that question. But idleness is my only occupation, and people are my only hobby. If I regard what I think is human, and perhaps I was asked precisely because I am not a human being, and therefore have attached a detached view of the subject, I would say it was a preoccupation with the idea of death. The reason why people do not live alone and do not spend hours doing nothing is because they can hear time ticking by. Then they develop hobbies which drive them mad. You may ask them, why do you do this? They ultimately say, well, it kills time. I don't want my time dead. Time is to be lived. Those who are not hopeless are worried that one day their lives will end. And if you live long enough, of course, you long for it to end. That's been my desire in recent times. I only hope to become extinct. But before all that, you must try everything. Have children, behave in such a way that monuments are built to you, rule the world. Have streets and theaters named after you. Write your autobiography. These are ways to stay alive. And this seems to be the preoccupation with the human being. When I was younger and was not ill, I didn't mind how long I lived. Now that every step of my life is painful, I long for death. If being human has any other special aspect, it is that in every human being, there are two people. One who sits in judgment on the other. The worldly, the doing person, acts irresponsibly, or nobly, or wisely, or foolishly, according to the mood or the situation. But inside him, further away, is an abstract spiritual being who never changes and who sits in judgment on him. This situation becomes evident when you hear people say, I was ashamed of myself. Who is ashamed of whom? It is this duality between the active living organism and the contemplative inner self that sits in judgment that constitutes the whole human being. This is, I think, what constitutes a human being.
That was What Does It Mean to Be Human?
You see, the ideal thing would be to have 365 friends and see each of them once a year.
To hear the full memorial for Quentin Crisp radio broadcast, visit This Way Out on SoundCloud.com. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Tanya Kane Perry and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lunn and Brian DeShazer. Brian was this week's feature producer. You heard music by the Moody Blues, and from the films The Naked Civil Servant and Homo Heights, Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinator and producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, Washington, WREK Atlanta, Georgia, BridgeRadioPA.com, Perth, Andover, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.